What I want to do today is kind of have a little bit of fun, but also do some training in addition to that. Not to put anybody on the spot, but I would like if a couple of volunteers, if you would, someone who is relatively new, been in the business for a little while, but has had the opportunity to at least write up a couple of apps, write up some apps. In other words, have gone out into the home, done that part, made the phone call, set the appointment, and actually gone to the home and sat in front of the client, and has been successful in selling the product, if you will. Is there a couple of people on the line here? I'm sure there is, but there's a couple of people on the line that would be willing to speak up and say, "Yeah, that's me," and so that I could use you as a person to for this training.
Hey, Vern.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Andy Craig. I don't know how much experience you're looking for, but I'm happy to help out in that.
Andy?
Yeah.
Great.
Just hey, Vern.
All right.
I'm Frank from Seattle. I've been all the way through the process except for getting a check.
All right, man. Hey, Frank, I owe you a phone call. I'll do this after the meeting, okay?
Okay.
All right. All right. For the rest of you, that's great. Andy and Frank, appreciate it, guys. Andy and Frank, is everybody else, I hope, is muted out, but I'm hearing some feedback on one of you. I guess maybe one of you on the cell phone or something.
I'm using Skype on the Internet, so I'm not sure what you are hearing on your end.
Okay, all right. Yeah, sounds like wind.
Hey, Brad?
Yes.
This is Jesse Wilkinson. If you want to use me.
I think we'll stick with Andy and Frank, Jesse, only because you're fading in and out on me. And I hear Andy and Frank okay, and I hope everybody else can.
All right. Okay.
So maybe next time. Unless everybody else, if you would, please mute your phone out. All right? Star 6. Okay? Great. All right. What we're going to do today is kind of like, it's my version of Jeopardy. You know how Jeopardy, the game show, works, where the answer is given to you, and you come back with a reply that's in the form of a question, but maybe not so much in a question. What I'm going to do is we're going to deal, and it's all based upon the training material that was provided to you, that you hopefully everybody has gone through, or at least in the process of going through. If you may recall, when you first got contracted, we sent you out an email that said, click on this link, and if you downloaded the training materials. You had two types of training materials, two different versions of it, not versions of it, but there are two types of training materials. One of them specifically talking about they are PowerPoint slides. There are about 24 of them, and actually there's probably about 60, 65 of them. But it starts out with the very first page being the Fitz Group Training Manual. And then you go through that about four, five, six slides, it looks like, and it talks about the different companies and how the rate and so forth. But then it goes to page 8 where it says the products, all right? And so the products, then, what we're talking about here is when it starts out with, of course, is F&G Home Certain, all right, and which is primarily the ones that we always like for new agents to start out with. And therefore, they can. That's what we're hoping to do, to get you started out with, so that because that's the most simplified version. It's also the one that you get paid quickly on, and that's primarily what the lead sheets, when they're generated, are generated with F&G's term in mind. I'm hearing some feedback. Is someone talking in the background? Okay. So, Andy and Frank, the reason I asked for someone that has been through the training and has had an opportunity to at least get out and write some business or somewhere in that process, the reason I asked for those is because what I'm assuming is you've taken the training and you've applied it and you're somewhere in that process and learning that and conveying that forward. So So what I thought I'd do today is based upon the training material and your experience, ask you some questions, and you provide me with some feedback or the answers to those questions. Okay? All right. So in other words, the very first on that slide there, the very first, it talks about F&G's term and home certain. So home certain is primarily what we're talking about. And, for example, the question I would ask you is, did you know, or what is the maximum time period in which a policy for home certain can be taken out for?
13 months.
13 months.
Okay, it wasn't the right question, but it you're right. Okay, what you're saying though is that they can qualify for a non-medical policy, or they can qualify without having to take a physical, as long as it's been within 13 months since they've contracted for that mortgage. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. But what I'm saying is that on the policy itself, remember you got a time period. What is the maximum time period that the home certain product can be written for?
30,
20 years.
Okay, depends on where you're at, right?
I'm in Washington State. It's 20 years here.
Yeah, Washington State, too, 20 years.
Okay. In most states,
it's 15 or 20-year term here in Washington.
I got you. Kind of interesting. Both of you from Washington State. But that's good. You're correct. In Washington State, it is 20 years. For the rest of you out there that are not in Washington State or Oregon State, which I'm not sure if it's Oregon State, but I know in Washington State, the maximum time, the 25 and 30-year time period is not available in Washington State. For the rest of us, anywhere from it is can be issued. The policy can be issued anywhere from 10 years to 30 years, maximum time period. Minimum time period is 10 years. Maximum time period is 30 years. What are the issue ages? Do you guys know offhand?
Up through age 60 with 15-year on home certain.
Up to 55 for home certain.
On the 20-year up to age 55, on the 15-year up to age 60, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to check the software, but I believe that's what it is.
Okay. Once again, it's a little different out there in that state. It's kind of, you're correct in both situations. All right. Issue ages, normally on most other states, the issue ages, you can go anywhere from 20 years to 60 years of age on a 10-year time period. But on a 15-year time period, can go anywhere from age 20 to age 70. All right. On a 20-year term, 20 years to age 55. 25-year term, 20 to 50, age 50. And for a 30-year term, most states, you can go up to age 65. So what they're saying here, and a lot of people are like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? What we're saying is that if you have a client for most states other than Washington State, so which comprises 49 of the other states, what we're saying is on the norm, if you have a client who is 65 years of age or 66 years of age in all actuality, then you cannot offer them a 30-year time period on their policy. You can offer them a 15-year max. Okay? Anything up to age 60 is 10 years, 15-year, or a 30-year. Okay. What types of smoking classes are offered on the home certain product?
Tobacco use
smoking classes?
Smoking class, or what type of classes?
You could do any kind of tobacco other than cigarettes and be considered non-tobacco on home certain. Is that what you're asking?
Yes. And what do you mean by that, Andy?
Well, I mean, if you smoke anything other than cigarettes, then you are considered non-tobacco for home certain.
So if I smoke marijuana?
If you smoke marijuana, that's actually, you can't write a home certain. You'd have to go to a medically underwritten product, and that's considered smoking.
Okay.
I've had a couple of those.
And probably get arrested, and get arrested for it, too. No, just
actually,
kidding.
No, you won't.
No.
Right. I've had a couple of those come up, so that's why I know.
Okay. Now, say that again for the rest of us.
What, with marijuana?
No, with smoking versus non-smoking. What's considered smoker for the home, for F&G's home certain?
Smoking is considered cigarettes.
Wait a minute, guys. I'm going to have to ask one of you to speak at a time.
Go ahead, Frank.
Go ahead and finish it since you started, and I'll ask Frank the next question.
Okay, that works. If you smoke cigarettes with home certain, that's considered smoking. Anything other than cigarettes is considered non-tobacco.
Which would be, for example?
Pipes, chewing, cigars, and any other form of tobacco that I can't think of because I don't smoke.
Right, chewing, snuff, dipping, pipes, and or cigars, I think is the four main categories you're talking about. So what Andy is saying for the rest of you, the new folks out there on the line, if you got someone who says, and they put, I just had this happen this weekend, for example, they indicate on the lead sheet that they're smokers, all right, and they're true when they say that. So when we're figuring up when you're out there in the home and you're getting ready to, you know, do some quotes or write up the application, and you just verify again, now do you smoke? And the guy comes back and says, well, actually, all I smoke is a cigar every now and then. And my comment to that would be is, as far as I'm concerned, you just hit the lottery because if it's only cigars, we can quote you and write you up on a non-smoker basis. And because they don't consider, F&G does not consider anything other than cigarettes as being tobacco. And the reason why that is because normally we do not inhale cigars or pipe tobacco. Now, you can argue all day long about the dangers, and rightfully so, the dangers of snuff and or chewing tobacco. Okay? But as far as F&G is concerned, what they're talking about is if cigarettes, you normally inhale them, and that's what they're concerned about as far as lung cancer and things like that. Okay? So that's a good thing to know, because that can really make the difference between, you know, the premiums are normally double what they would be as a non-tobacco user. Okay? So it's a good thing to know, and you always want to verify that. You know, you may get those funny looks in your face when you say cigarettes. Is that the only thing you smoke, or you smoke anything other than cigarettes? And they're like, "What are you talking about? You mean marijuana?" No. Quickly to deny it. Okay. Good point.
Hey, Vern.
Yes.
Before you move on there, just one quick bit of clarification. I want to make sure that. I mentioned it earlier, but I want to make sure it's clear that if someone is smoking marijuana, that is not able to be written on home certain. You'd have to go to a saver select to write that out, and that's considered a tobacco product at that point.
Okay. Good point.
That's all.
Okay. Home Certain also offers other features. For example, what is the age in which they are able to convert their Home Certain over to a permanent plan? What's the maximum age?
70.
Okay. Thanks, Frank. I forgot to say, Frank, but you follow along. That's true. What that means is that they may have a Home Certain term policy here that runs for a period of time, and we've already discussed that, with anywhere from 10 to 20 or 30 years, depending on what state you're in. What that means is, though, they can convert that term policy, the Home Certain, over to a what I call a permanent plan, like a UL, up until the end of the time period, or until they reach the age of 70, whichever comes first. All right, and anything they've got there, they can convert it over to the UL. Now, what this says here says it's renewable to age 95. Now, I'll go back to Andy. What do you mean? What do they mean by that?
renewing the home certain until 95, is that what you said?
Correct. Correct.
I mean, it's guaranteed renewable until they're 95. It just means after the initial guaranteed term, whether it's a 10, 15, 20, or whatever the duration is, the premiums are going to go up every year in accordance with their age. So you have your initial guarantee through the first 10 or 30 years, and then it's your guaranteed renewable to age 95. The premium
right.
is going to go through the roof.
Right. But what Andy said is true, is that it's, when you're sitting there and you're talking to them about the benefits of this product, the one thing that you might want to mention, and it really comes into play when, as they get older, in their 40s and 50s, is that what this means is that the policy, you have to do something, whatever the time period is. At the end of that time period, you basically have to tell them if you don't want it. In other words, they're going to ask you, hey, your policy is getting ready to renew. Do you want to continue it or do you want to cancel it and so forth and so forth? Then basically, if you don't do anything to stop it, it will automatically renew itself, if you will, until that person reaches age of 95. So, and the reason they offer that is simply because as we get older, if we were trying to get insurance and we didn't already have something in place like this offers, is it's very difficult to get insurance as you get older, especially if your health it starts deteriorating, which normally happens as we get older. So if you've got a policy in place and the Home Certain policy is in place, you had it in place now, you've been paying for it for 15, 20, 30 years, whatever time period it is, it's getting ready to expire, if you will, you have the option of telling them and letting them know, hey, I want to keep on renewing this, and they will make it what is called an annual renewable term at that point. So every year it will renew itself. But you need to also let them know that it just means as they can continue to have coverage, that they're just going to pay a whole lot more for it. And we don't know how much that is, but just be prepared for the fact that at least they have that option then of continuing it or not. I like to equate it to, like, I don't know if any of you have ever worked for a corporation and then got laid off where you had medical benefits and you no longer have them, but you have the option of continuing those same medical benefits under what they call COBRA, and naturally you're paying full price for it. So it's kind of like the same way. You have the option of continuing your life coverage with F&G up until the age of 95. You're just going to pay more for it. Okay. We already talked about the mortgage in the last 13 months. So what that means then is that there is no medical underwriting as long as if it's a home certain that you're offering them, the mortgage has to be either taken out or in other words, the deed has to be signed within the last 13 months, and that's usually indicated on that lead sheet. However, I would also recommend that if you're there, verify that is the correct time period, because sometimes the folks that are generating this data tends to make mistakes. So just verify it, because sometimes it may look like it's over 13 months, but when you do ask them, say, no, I took it out, 4 months ago instead of 14 months ago. You know what I'm saying? What is the minimum amount that they can protect, if you will, with the Home Certain product? What is the minimum dollar amount?
$25,000.
Say it again.
$25,000.
Right. What's the maximum?
$250,000.
All right, without a physical, correct.
Well, without a physical, $250,000 if you want to go with the physical. Actually, the urine specimen is all you need. You can go up to $500,000.
Correct. Very good. You guys are doing good so far.
One quick comment for you, Vern, on what was it? Oh, you were about the mortgages. If you've got an older lead there, this is something that I've done recently. While you're there in the home, we've had, at least in Seattle area, there's several refinances going on. I don't know about the rest of the country, but we're always having refinances up here. If you've got an older lead there, or like I've had some leads that are like $5,000 for the mortgage, which is basically just a small line of credit, what you can do is ask them if they've got any other mortgages that are out there that they've enacted that are just not put there on that letter, and you can also use that information to like if you have a $5,000 lead there, you're not going to be able to write a very large policy off that because the maximum benefit is 125% of your mortgage. So you can find out what the other forms of mortgages that they have and see if they've got anything else that they've done within the past 13 months, and you can use that as well.
Correct. You can add the two together and come up with one total mortgage. I always ask them that because a lot of times the lead sheet, like you said, if it's a small amount, it may be a home equity loan, but it also may be the 20% of the 80-20. In other words, it may be two mortgages there they took out because they didn't have enough to put down to qualify for the one full amount. So they've taken out two loans, two mortgages, if you will. And so you may have gotten the one for the smaller amount versus the larger amount or either or. But you always want to verify that how much the total amount that they're looking at. And if their loan is that much or the mortgage is that much, how much are they really wanting to protect? The lead sheet is there is informational purposes. It's more or less the entry into the home. But while you're there, you can definitely verify and or question and or ask. It's not the same thing, of course, but and determine that, and so that you may be able to not that you're trying to get around anything, but the dates there may vary, and therefore whatever the loan there that's taken out at the later time period may well fall within the 13 months, so that you don't have to go back and do the saver select. Good point. Okay. We know that with HomeCertain, it is simplified issue, meaning it's either accepted or rejected. Now, there are some guidelines. Andy, can you tell me one of the medical related situations that they would still be considered to be as standard within the HomeCertain product? In other words, if they're experiencing some medical issues, but yet they still wouldn't have to take a physical, nor would they be rejected under the HomeCertain.
Well, there's several items. The first few that come to my mind are diabetes. If you're diabetic type 2, but you're not taking insulin, if you're on oral meds, then we can still write you standard.
Okay.
If you've got hypertension, high cholesterol, even a heart murmur, we can still take you underneath HomeCertain, depending on the situation. I've talked to them, they're writing on that stuff recently, so I've getting a lot of schooling in that area so far.
You getting what?
A lot of schooling in what we will accept and not accept underneath HomeCertain. It's very, very liberal. You just got to know what your guidelines are.
Okay. You mentioned diabetes, type 2, meaning non-insulin dependent.
Correct.
Hypertension, cholesterol. Heart murmurs is an iffy one at best, but
I brought that one up because I just talked to them writing on that. If they've had a heart murmur since they were a kid and was diagnosed, but nothing's happened since they were a child, then we will accept it. Otherwise, it's not going to fly. That one just came off the top of my head, and I didn't explain that one. So
okay, Frank, you know some of the other ones.
Asthma.
Okay.
Arthritis.
Okay.
Anxiety and depression.
Sound like you're reading off the paper here.
That's right.
Anxiety/depression. Assuming it's mild, short term. In other words, it's not like bipolar and things like that. So now, here's a recommendation for anyone who is out there and you are, in fact, encountering these situations, the medical issues. You're asking the questions on page 6, and first thing it say, yes, I'm dealing with high blood pressure. Highly recommend, not recommend, but insist, if you will, is that to complete the additional forms or those supplemental questionnaires that are included that you should have included with your training materials and your download materials that you should be having carry with you when you're in the home, so that in case you run across this, you don't have to go back and re-get all these questions asked again or answered again, is the medical what I call the supplemental questionnaires there that we've provided you in either Word format or F&G provides you in PDF format on the diabetes, on the hypertension, on the asthma, on the depression, and things like that, okay? Make sure you have those supplemental questionnaires completed and submit those with your application, because when they do get here to our office and they do not have those with those, then we're going to hold that and get a hold of you and have you go back and get those questions answered. Because if we submit them up without it, then in all likelihood, you run a higher risk of them declining them, not because the information, not because they may not, they may be rejected simply because they do not have enough information is what I'm saying. Okay? And especially like Andy just mentioned earlier with murmurs. There are certain situations even there that they may still decline them if they are diabetic. There may be other issues in there that causes that to be declined. But I would rather them, have a more, if I may use the term, intelligent decision by doing that rather than by having all the information available rather than just decline them because the information is not available. Okay? What about height and weight?
What about him?
Well, let's say the person is let's say it's a female and she's 5'5½" and weighs 300 pounds.
Not going to go.
She would not qualify.
Why is that?
It's not gender-based, but it goes up to 5'10", 293.
Okay. Yes. Now, where would I find that information then? How would I know that if I didn't?
Reject guidelines?
Yes, sir. On your accept-reject guidelines, which is also part of your download that you get, what I've done is taken those accept-reject guidelines. They're in PDF format, which most of them are, and I've just put them on my desktop, on my laptop, so that when I'm in the home there and I can't remember, and therefore I want to make sure before I submit the app that the person's not going to fit into the guidelines, I can just pull up those accept-reject guidelines, and if you just scroll down to the very last page of that, which I think is like 5 or 6 pages, then it's going to tell you what the height and weight restrictions are. Okay, go ahead.
On the health issues, is that something you would pre-screen prior to your appointment over the telephone?
It's always a good thing. Now, once again, and may I ask who it is asking the question?
This is Mary Watt. I just signed my papers a couple of days ago.
Okay. Oh, great, Mary. Congratulations and welcome. I just want to know who was asking questions so I can say Mary instead of ma'am. Mary, that's a good question. I like to ask that question before I go out there simply because I want to be better prepared for when I walk in the house to know what I can offer them. All right. Now, having said that, I also, as a new agent, you're pretty well, right now you're only contracted or appointed to F&G, all right? And so if F&G can't offer it, then you're kind of in a situation there where now what do I do type thing. And so we always recommend that is if you run into one of those situations where you're not sure, give us a call or call someone that has maybe experienced it before. We'll primarily call one of us. I like to ask that question when I'm setting the appointment. I always like to ask them two questions. Now, I learned my mistake, and I used to just say, "What kind of med? Are you taking any medications?" Okay, and usually, if they're on medication, then that means they're on medication for a reason. Okay, but I run into a situation this weekend, and I was just telling Fitz about it. Is that the question was asked, "Are you on any medication?" And the answer was no. Okay, well, I thought, okay, great. Walked in the house, and the guy is, the gentleman is actually, has Lou Gehrig's disease. And which means is, he's in a wheelchair, he can't talk, can't communicate at all. It's pretty advanced stages. But he wasn't on any medications for it. So I was a little bit surprised and shocked, and then the next appointment, the guy said, I'm on muscle relaxants. He is, because he's in advanced stages of multiple sclerosis. Okay. So what I'm getting at is yes, I would normally ask, are you experiencing any major health challenges? Cancer, heart disease, diabetes, high low blood pressure, cholesterol, or anything else that you may be on medication for? And then when they tell you that, then you're better prepared to know whether or not that, and based upon experience and also your learning, you know that if the person says, I am a diabetic, and then you ask them, is it type 2 or not, and or are you on pills, or is it controlled by medications, or is it controlled by insulin? And if they say insulin, then you know there's nothing you can really offer them from F&G, because they won't, even with Saver Select, in most cases they won't even. Okay?
Okay.
Did that answer your question, Mary?
Yeah, it sure does.
Okay. Okay. The height and weight is one of those, if the person is 5'5" and weighs, borderline, you know, with whatever the guidelines is for someone who weighs, which means that when they say unisex, that means it doesn't, male or female, it doesn't matter. Those are the guidelines regardless of their sex. So if they're 5'5" and the guideline says is that they cannot be approved for home certain if they weigh more than, I forget what it is for 5'5", let's say 220 pounds, all right? And so therefore you know if the person is 5'5" and they weigh 300 pounds, then in all likelihood they're not going to be qualified. They can't qualify for the home certain. In all likelihood they won't qualify at all. But you don't know that, all right? But you're pretty well assured they won't be qualified for home certain. My recommendation would be for any of these situations, whether it's medical, whether or not it is the weight or whatever, if there's a question in there, you feel like that there's a risk there that they could be declined or you don't know the answer to from a medical, but as Andy indicated earlier, the best thing to do is contact F&G's underwriting department and ask them if you can do a risk assessment on a person that, and give them all the specifics as much as you know of that person. That's why it's always good, Mary, going back to Mary's question, is to get as much medical information as you can before you go on the appointment. As you're making the appointment, ask those medical questions as much as you feel like you need to ask, especially when they indicate yes to one of those questions, and then you delve into it and get a little bit more background into it. Then ask those questions and do a risk assessment before you go out there, because that way then you can, if F&G's underwriting says, sorry, we cannot offer them any type of coverage under any of the F&G's products, meaning HomeCertain, Saver Select, or anything else, then you get on the phone to us and you say, oh, by the way, I need to know which direction I need to go here. Okay? So, that's good. Okay. Moving right along, we already talked about the cigarettes versus cigarettes. Smoker means cigarette smoker currently or within the past year. All right, so they may have said, I don't smoke anymore, but the question states, have you smoked within the past year? And if you have, what is it, and so forth? You may or may not, and I'm probably not even going to want to cover this, but HomeCertain does offer a decreasing term option. As a matter of fact, you can opt for it. It's not a very popular one. I don't recommend it because it doesn't. If they're looking for a decreasing term, you probably will. They're going to ask why go with you? I can get that with anybody else. And so, HomeCertain, they're more the level of term benefit that HomeCertain offers is much more of a value to the person than something that is decreasing term. There are some riders. Okay? Meaning these are options that they can add to the HomeCertain. Andy, what is one of the options there? I'm asking two guys from Washington, which some of the riders aren't available with. Okay? I just realized that.
About a return of premium, that is not one of them here. We do have a disability income, and I'll let Frank go with the others that are there.
Okay, well, let's go to the disability then.
Okay.
When we talk about disability, give me some examples of what the disability rider would, you know, what is the age in which they can offer it through? What age does it fall off? I mean, the rider itself, and so forth.
It's available up through age 55, and I tell you, too, that I don't remember when it falls off. I want to say 60, 65, but I don't remember on that one.
60.
It's 60? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we can do it up to age 55, and then, as you said, it falls off at age 60. Did you want to know the guidelines on it?
Yeah.
Did you ask? Okay. Guidelines are it's 1.5% of the face amount of what you're writing. Up to 66 2/3% of the gross income, or $1,500, whichever is less, of the insured that you're writing it on.
Correct. Okay. Frank, what kind of a waiting period do you have on the disability?
90 days.
What does that mean?
It means that you have to be disabled for 90 days before it kicks in.
Correct. Okay.
Before they can get the benefit.
Right. Because the disability rider that they offer is a long-term disability rider, so as I always tell them, by definition, that just means short-term has to kick in. Whether they currently have short-term disability at their job, which most people do if they've got any medical coverage, because it's usually whatever the medical coverage covers for up to 90 days, then there's still going to be a 90-day wait, whether they have any type of medical coverage at all. It will not kick in until after 90 days. How long what's the maximum length of time that they can receive the income?
2 years.
2 years. Which means is that there's a 90-day wait, then they would get paid an income according to what Andy just mentioned. Either 1.5% of the mortgage amount is the maximum amount. It's the least of the three. 1.5% of the mortgage, 66 2/3 of their money or their income, or $1,500, whichever is the lowest of those three. Okay. And for up to 2 years per disability. Okay. What they mean? Define total disability. And I'll define it according to F&G's definition, which naturally is their definition. Total disability is defined as the inability to perform material and substantial duties of any occupation and must begin prior to insured age 60. Any occupation. So are there occupation? Let me rephrase the question. I'm going back to Frank again. Frank, how would I know which occupation is limited to getting disability or not? Where would I find that information?
In the Accept Reject Guide.
No, Andy.
If you go into the options on the software, you have the disability income guidelines that are, you have all products, and then you have home certain only. It's underneath options at the very bottom of the options underneath your F&G software.
So it's all right there for you, correct?
Correct.
All you got to do is, you're in the software already. The person says, I want disability. And the first thing I always ask them, okay, great. Let me ask you a question. What do you do for a living? And they say, I'm a police officer.
Not going to fly.
Why is that?
Their occupation is too high of a risk. I actually just met with a police officer about 10 days ago and sat down with her and looked at the disability. I was pretty confident it was not offered, and I got confirmed.
Right.
If you look in the software, it's actually zero, which you can't do.
Right. Okay. You bring up a good point. You looked on the software underneath the options, underneath the DI rider. One says for home certain, says all others, right? All right. If I looked on that and it did show an occupation as police officer, for example, does that mean that I can still get it, or do I have to still also look at something else on that sheet? In other words, on the right-hand column on there, if there are a set of numbers, what does that mean?
For home certain, if there's a 1 through 4, that means we can go ahead and do the disability rider. If
Right.
there's a 0, then we can't do it.
Exactly. And don't go any further than that. You've explained it correctly. What I'm saying is, what he's saying is that if you're unsure, you look on the option sheet, and if it has an occupation on there, if there's a number next to that on the right-hand column of there, anything from 1 through 4, then that means is they may, not guaranteed again still, but that means is they can still qualify for the disability. It's not an automatic no. If there's a 0, then they can't qualify for it. So if you were looking on the option sheet or option screen there of the same software that you're quoting them on, that's what we're getting at, is it's all right there for you, folks. All you got to do is click on it and bring it up, and it'll list it. You just kind of page down until you get to it. And it has a number next to it. That means that they can still qualify for it. Now, I may not guarantee that they can, because depending upon the occupation, it may have a number. But construction, for example, because it gives you all kinds of breakdown, and they may or may not do a telephone interview, and therefore may make a determination of the person, even though it says they can qualify, they may not qualify because it may generate a risk that's higher than they want to take. For example, I was with a client here a while back that owns his own roofing company, all right? As owner-operator, most of the time, that's going to be an almost an automatic yes, because their owner-operator, meaning is they usually aren't the ones doing the work. They're either managing it or overseeing it and so forth. Well, just because he still couldn't qualify, because they asked him, the question was, do you climb up on the roof and do the work yourself? And he says, I go up and help. Well, they consider that too high of a risk. Even though it said that he could qualify, he didn't qualify based upon the level of the risk associated with it. Okay, good point. Okay, let's go back to the police officer there, Andy. And they cannot get disability. Is there any other type of disability there that you could offer them?
As far as income is concerned?
I'm sorry?
As far as disability income is concerned?
Any type of disability.
I guess I'm not understanding your question. There's no DI that we can do a police officer with, to my knowledge.
Right. There's no DI, but there's a critical illness.
Okay. That's what I was trying to figure out if you were asking.
Right.
You can do a CI, but you can't do a DI.
Right.
Okay.
That's an option. That's an alternative, if you will.
Yes, it is.
I refer to it as a medical disability versus a physical disability.
Okay.
I just use that terminology simply because they're easier to understand. They tend to understand that better than saying critical illness. I tell them I don't like to use the term critical illness simply because it has such a negative connotation to it. But basically what I do is explain to them, I says, okay, folks, when you're talking about disability, we're really looking at two different types of disability. We have a physical disability. That's the one we just talked about that says if you get hurt, injured, or become ill, cannot perform your substantial duties of any occupation. In other words, if they break their leg and they can't work that, they may still be able to do something else. And so that means they couldn't get the disability. So they have to be totally disabled from any occupation, in order for them to be able to receive it. So that's kind of a catch in there, if you will. But basically, they are still eligible. They may still be eligible for what we call a medical disability, which is a critical illness. Okay, and we covered that a little bit. All right. What do we mean when we say waiver premium? Is that an option that they can get within as part of their disability?
Who are you asking?
Either one.
It's automatic.
Part of the disability?
It's automatic in Washington.
Okay, it's automatic. Oh, okay. You're right. Man, I keep forgetting. The waiver premium is automatic in Washington. The waiver premium?
No, it's not automatic.
No. I think you're talking about the guarantee.
EPT is required, but waiver premium is not required.
Right. used to be if you were able to get disability with Home Certain, the waiver premium had to be with it, but now then it's an option. What does the waiver premium do? What does it offer? Why would we want to offer that as part of the disability?
That's the that's saying that if they get disabled, then they don't have to pay their premium. If they get disabled for a month, then they don't have to pay the premium while they're receiving their benefit, right?
Correct. What that means is this exactly what it says. If they were to become disabled, not only would they get the payout for the 2 years per disability, but the premiums that they're paying for this protection are waived during that disability. Now, if they became permanent disabled, does that mean they're permanently waived, or does that mean it stops at the same time that the disability stops?
Well, the waiver premium is good for 6 months, and disability is good for 2 years. So at the end of 6 months, they have to be making the premiums of something, or the policy is going to lapse. Once the disability is over, then their income stops after that 2 years.
Okay. Let me clarify for you. All right, it's going to waive the premium. It pays the premium. In other words, they're not making the premium payments. Now, there's a 6 month waiting period for it, but it's retroactive. In other words, after 6 months, they're going to go back and pay those premiums back to the if they're disabled for 2 years, then there's a 6 month waiting period. That means then. After 6 months, then they're going to stop making payments, but they take it back for the previous 6 months. They return those premiums back to the client. All right, but it's also for the entire duration of the disability. Okay, so if they're only disabled for 2 years, then the premiums are waived during that disability. However, if they became permanently disabled, meaning they couldn't work again for the rest of their life, then of course they're still going to get their payout for that 2 years. But the premiums they're making on that are they'll never make another premium payment because they're totally disabled.
Oh.
So they got free insurance. Now, as with the disability rider itself, they can issue it through the age of 55, and it does drop off at age 60, just like the disability does. Did you know that they can also add that any time during the lifetime of the policy with evidence of insurability? So this is one option that they can add any time. Whereas some of the other options, they can only add it at the time of the initial issue.
Yeah, that just changed, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can we guarantee our premiums with the Home Certain product?
Yes.
Okay. Now, once again, in Washington State, I know it's automatic, so they don't even have an option. It's part of it, right?
Huh?
The guarantee?
Talking about EPG?
GPG, mm-hmm. They don't choose it. It's part of it, yes, EPG.
Yeah, it's required on Home Certain. It's not an option. It's automatically there.
Right. Yeah. You just tell them that, hey, that we can guarantee the premiums never go up, and so you don't even ask them if they want it. It's just part of it, right? It's kind of like that old Prego commercial that's in there. What? Other states do offer it. It's an option. We can extend the automatic guarantee period to the entire length of the term. Now, you guys probably don't know this answer since it's an automatic feature in Washington State, but what is the time period for other states that is anything other than 30, what is the time? There's a time period that's an automatic, there's a time period that they can opt for and choose and pay extra for where it extends it through the length of time that the policy is in effect.
5 years?
Right. Anything other than 30 years, if they go with a 10-year plan, a 15-year plan, a 20-year plan, or a 25-year plan, assuming they can, you know, the age limit allows them to go that length of time. We've already talked about the age time period. what we're saying on that is, it basically says is that for if they don't opt for the extended premium guarantee, that's choice that they choose, of course, then automatically defaults to a 5-year time period. If it's a 30-year time period and they do not opt for the extended premium guarantee, then it defaults to 15 years. And all that means is that if you want to make sure that those premiums never go up, we can do that. We can add that feature for you, and it's minimal dollars. But that just means is you don't ever have to worry about it for the whole time the policy is in effect. Yeah. If you do not opt for that, then we're going to say at least for the first 5 years or the first 15 years, you don't have to worry about it. And so a lot of times I will almost always promote the extended premium guarantee with every quote or every plan that I'm working up on the person, depending upon, of course, the age, of course. And simply because I tell people, like I tell them, my wife likes going to bed at night knowing she doesn't have to worry about her insurance premiums going up the next day, because usually that's something the women worry about more than the men. Okay? However, if we're dealing with a financial situation or a budget issue there where they're kind of, you know, right on the borderline of whether or not they think they can afford it or not, that is an option. That'd be one of the first options I'd take off of there, simply because we know, especially with the 30-year, for the first 15 years, they don't have to worry about it anyway. And usually what I say, in all actuality, Mrs. Jones, insurance premiums really haven't gone up since they've been in existence. And that's primarily because we're living longer as a society. However, of course, medical coverage goes up every day for the same reason, because we're living longer. But from an insurance perspective, premium haven't really gone up. And insurance companies are really a lot like utility companies. They're not just going to raise your rates and not raise anybody else's. If they're going to be raised at all, they're going to be raised across the board, if you will. Plus, before they even look at that, they're going to look at the mortality rate, the cost of living, so forth and so forth, and then what they have to do is take these findings and present them in front of their own respective commissioners and ask for a raise, and so far they've all voted no. So if we're talking about the difference between $15 a month and how much an extended premium guarantee is going to add to their premiums, then basically let's take that out of there, because for 30 years it's already guaranteed for 15 years. And so that just means is they're not even going to look at it for the first 15 years. Okay?
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Disability, if someone has a disability and they get a payout, does that cut into their term insurance at all? Does it decrease it if after that they, you know, died like 10 years later and they had 5 years or 2 years of disability, you know, payments? Does that affect their actual term insurance at all as far as their payout?
Ask the panel. Andy, what do you think? What's your answer to that?
If it's the physical disability, no. If you look at it the way you, Vern, have described the medical disability, then yes. If they've got physical disability on there, then the payout would not be affected. So, for example, if you've got $200,000 protection on your mortgage and you've got physical disability, then no. If you have a medical disability and you've got critical illness on there, you can access up to 50% of your death benefit for $100,000. That would decrease your death benefit after you've used that.
Okay.
Very good. This is true. The disability, it's DIR, it says disability income rider. So it's basically if it's that particular option, Mary, and then it is it's considered as an income.
Okay.
Which means it doesn't subtract from the face amount. However, as a side note, because it's considered an income, they will be taxed on that income.
Okay.
All right. However, if it's a critical illness, and let's just call it what they define it as, critical illness, at the rider there, it's what the critical illness rider does is it accelerates the death benefit, if you will. And depending upon which option they choose there, either a 1-year payout, a 2-year payout, or a lump sum payout, and depending on which state, it may either be anywhere from 50 to 100% of the face amount. Whatever that amount is that they get paid out will be subtracted from their death benefit. Correct.
Okay.
Good questions. Okay. Did you know, or a question, I guess, accidental death, is that part of the home certain product?
Yes.
Okay. What does that mean?
In terms of how does it affect the policy?
Well, in other words, accidental death, it says here, is free.
Correct.
How much?
50%.
50%.
So if you've got a $250,000 policy and you're in an auto accident on the way home from work, your beneficiaries get $375,000 instead of $250,000.
Great. Can they add to that?
Yes, they can. They can go up to 100% by having an additional charge.
Right. This is true. And okay, let me clarify all that. Andy, you answered the questions correct, okay? What we're saying here is, for the benefit of the rest of you, is that home certain comes with it. So it's an automatic thing that says that we're going to add another 50% of whatever that face amount is to that. Whatever that face amount is, we're going to add another 50% to that if, in fact, you were to die as a result of an accident. And the reason I'm promoting that and the reason I'm talking about it this way is because that is such a powerful, powerful, powerful option, not even an option, it's a powerful feature, if you will, that a lot of other companies don't offer, or a lot of plans don't offer. I mean, you may get that, you may opt for that, but you pay for it. So what that means then is basically they're getting 1.5 times the value of that, but they're only paying 1 times the cost. Because they're only paying for the face amount, they're getting the additional 50% of that added to it if it's an accident. And the way I promote it is simply as this. This is a level benefit here we're talking about, Mrs. Jones. Which means is, if it's 200,000, let's use the 200,000. If it's 200,000, that means it's always going to be 200,000, whether you die today, tonight, tomorrow night, next week, next year, or 30 years from now. Okay? Now, a lot of plans, it's an accidental death only, which means is, usually they define the accident, which is usually a common carrier accident. Meaning the only time they paid off is if they died as a result of an accident, and only if that accident was caused by any common carrier that you're riding in, the planes, the trains, buses, and taxis. Okay, so you're paying for something, and it goes back to, well, yeah, you may only be paying $14 a month for it, but it goes back to, it's, you get what you pay for, and in this case, you're getting what you're not paying for, or you're not paying for something you're not getting, let's put it that way. So what we mean by that is that if you were involved in an accident, in this case we're talking about just about any accident. Now there are some restrictions, and I usually say, for example, is robbing a bank and getting shot doesn't constitute an accident, even though you didn't intend to get shot. That's not considered that. Acts of war, acts of terrorism, overdosing of drugs, committing suicide, and things like that. Those are the more common ones, and that's usually about all there is. But the more common accidents, like auto accident, means you know, if you were involved in an accident, Mr. Jones, your wife here is going to get a check for $300,000, not $200,000. And they're going to take that money, they're going to do whatever they need to with that. Even if you were involved in the accident and you wound up in the hospital for a period of time, and you eventually did die as a result of your injuries, that is still considered an accidental death. Because, you see, insurance companies, they really consider death one of two ways. Either we're all going to die as a result of a medical situation, and old age is part of that, or we're going to die as a result of an accident. So, if you're in good health, but even if you're not in the best of health, it's under control. You're going to your doctor regularly. You're taking your medications and so forth. Then the risk of you dying medically in the next 15, 20 years is probably a lot less of a risk, if you will, than it is from an accident. So because they consider this falls underneath this mortgage protection plan here that we're developing, what the company will do is add another 50% of that face amount if you were to die as a result of an accident. So it's a very good feature to offer and a very good feature to promote because a lot of companies won't offer that. So you're really talking about 1.5 times the value here. It may be added at any time. You can add that. The 50% is free, of course, but if you want to add the other 50% and pay extra for it, like Andy was talking about, then you can add that any time that the policy is in effect, as long as you can verify evidence of insurability, which means health. Okay. And it will also terminate at age 70. Okay. Critical illness, we already talked about that a little bit, but there are some pretty specific criteria, I guess is the best way to put it, for critical illness. And rather than ask the question, let me briefly cover it. It will pay upon a physician's diagnosis of life-threatening cancer, heart attack, stroke, paralysis, renal failure, which is kidney failure, major organ transplants, major organ transplant, okay, loss of sight. Now, that means it has to occur after you take it out. It's not a retroactive situation, pre-existing. Loss of sight or loss of two or more limbs. So, as I mentioned earlier when Andy and I were talking about the disability and I was asking what other types, this is what I'm talking about. This is an option that you can offer someone who may not qualify because of their occupation for the medical or the physical disability or the disability income rider. You can offer them this in lieu of. I look at it this way, and this is how I promote it. Is that, let me ask you a question.
Who's there right here?
Do you know of anyone, or have you personally experienced it, or someone in your immediate family, where they've experienced a heart attack and or a cancer? In other words, one of the four major causes of death in the United States today other than accidents? Oh, yeah, I have. Then, good. Then you know 73% of the people in the United States today, that's really what we're talking about, 73% of the people. What it will do, though, is it will accelerate the payout of the death benefit. We have mentioned that. It cannot exceed 100% of the face amount, or 250,000, whichever is less, or 50%, depending on which state you're in. In other words, it cannot exceed 100%, but it may only, some states will limit you to 50% of that. Now, think about this. Critical illness is a great option for it. Now, think about this. Let's assume that you got a person that has $250,000 worth of death benefit, and he were diagnosed, and he had this option that, and he could, if he were diagnosed with heart disease and wasn't able to work, he can get up to $250,000 or $175,000, whatever the limits are. He can get all that paid up to him while he's still alive. He can pay off his debts and have all that taken care of before it ever, even while he's still alive, to enjoy it. It's a pretty powerful feature there. Okay? They may select the amount at issue. In other words, they can either have a 1-year payout, a 2-year payout, or the lump sum payout. Now this is a specific rider that requires you to complete the supplemental questionnaire that called critical illness, and it has to be signed by the client.
Hey, Vern.
Yes.
Can I ask a question on the critical illness there?
Mm-hmm.
You're mentioning that they can elect for a 1, 2, or lump sum. I know here in Washington it's automatically a lump sum. Does that have a different option in other states?
When you say automatically lump sum?
I mean, for example, if you want to calculate out, say, 2 years' worth of payments at $2,500, that'd be $60,000. You can calculate that out, but it's going to be a lump sum of $60,000 that's paid out when they use the rider.
Yes.
Rather than having like 25, like with the disability, it's going to be a monthly of up to $1,500.
Right.
Or with like the ultimate income rider, you can say, okay, I want to pay out $2,500 a month for 5 years. With the critical illness here, it's a lump sum. Is that available in monthly installments in the state?
Okay. The illustration will tell you that it's paid out in a lump sum based upon whatever monthly amount that you indicate on the software and the time period. In other words, if it's a 1 year payout, a 2 year payout, basically, in checking with F&G, what their definition is if you elect for the 1 year payout or the 2 year payout at so much per month, they will pay that out on a monthly basis unless you tell them you want it to be paid out in a lump sum. For example, let's say you've selected the 2 year monthly payout of $1,500 a month, or let's just say $1,000 a month because it's easy for me to remember. $1,000 a month for 2 years, that's a $24,000 payout, right? Okay. What they're saying is that they'll pay you that monthly at $1,000 a month. Unless you tell them you want it paid out in the lump sum of $24,000. For example, if you were diagnosed with cancer, for example, and you had this option of 1 year, 2 year payout, $1,000 a month, that's what you're paying the premiums for, of course. Then the doctor says, I'm sorry, man, you only got a year left to live. Rather than them getting paid out over a 2 year time period because you're dead a year, you can call the company up and say, I want all of that paid out, that 2 years worth paid out in one lump sum payment. The illustration in and of itself doesn't really say that. It just says it's going to be paid out in a lump sum. Even though you selected the 1 year or the 2 year payout. Okay?
So even though the illustration is saying lump sum, you have the option of getting it in a year payout, 2 year payout, or lump sum?
In a monthly payout over a year or 2 year, depending on what you chose on the software. Yes.
Okay.
Or a lump sum. Or if you say I want a lump sum of $50,000, it's a $100,000 face amount, and it's a maximum amount, then they'll pay that lump sum in $50,000. They won't pay that over a monthly basis. The software gives you the option of choosing which type of payout. The illustration says one thing, but F&G basically says, no, we'll pay it out on a monthly basis unless you tell us differently.
Oh.
If you chose the 1 year or the 2 year payout. Okay. Now there are some limitations to it. Even though there's not a 90-day wait, the illness must manifest itself after 90, cannot manifest itself within the first 90 days at the time the policy is taken out. So there's not a 90-day wait. It's just that they can't manifest. In other words, you're going to have to wait 90 days regardless. The coverage is limited to 5 times the salary. The applicant must not have 3 or more family members who have died prior to age 60 due to any cardiovascular disease, any renal disease, cancer, or insulin-dependent diabetes. So they ask you the question, and on the supplemental questionnaire, they want to know your family history, your father, age of living, and what his state of health is, mother, brothers and sisters, and so forth, or if they're dead, what age did they die at, and what was the cause of death. Okay. On the critical illness, I mentioned the 90 days following this. It must first manifest itself at least 90 days following the effective date of the rider, or 60 days if it's a life-threatening cancer. There's no waiting period. Basically, that's about it. So critical illness seems is, to me, it's kind of confusing, all the different limitations, and we kind of got into a little bit of that just now with the different questions. My point on this is, if you do have questions on it and you got someone who's looking for it, or you would like to offer it, get up to speed on it first. We have brochures that specifically are related to critical illness, and that may be something good there to have with you, so you can look at it if you need to, or call us up and ask us the questions. Okay. There are a couple of other riders. For example, if you have children in a, if the client has children in a home, would you, an option would be a children's term rider. Do, have either one of you offered that? Been able to, offer that to, someone in the home, Andy or Frank?
Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the guidelines associated with that?
They have to be at least 2 weeks old, and between 2 weeks old and 18, the kids.
Yeah, 15 days, that's pretty close, 2 weeks, yeah. Go ahead. Now, are they charged a premium for each child?
No.
Okay.
Premium for all the children.
For all the children. That's a good thing to note for the rest of you on the line, is they can have one or 100 children, they're paying the same premium.
You don't have a
man. Yeah.
I'm talking to about free trade. They have the black.
What is the minimum face amount?
$5,000.
What's the maximum?
$10,000.
Per child. Per child. Per household.
Per household, right.
Well, no, per child, per household. What I mean by that is, if you got husband and wife and you are completing the application on both husband and wife, and you opt for a child term rider on each of them, they can't have $10,000 on the husband and $10,000 child term rider on the wife, because that's $20,000. What we're talking about is you'd have to go with $5,000 per child and $5,000 per child on each application. It totals $10,000 because you're talking about $10,000 on the child itself. But it has, if it's both husband and wife are completing the application and both of them are choosing that child term rider, then basically it means is you can only go to a maximum of five per application per household. See what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's, F&G will return it if it's different than that. Okay. All right. I'm noticing the time. We're about run out of time now, and so there's several other riders here that HomeCertain offers. But I think what I was trying to get at today, and hopefully accomplish, is to kind of give you an idea by without just sitting here and saying this is what it does, to get some feedback from somebody else as why they're in the home, what they've done, and some of the different options there that's available at HomeCertain. So we'll probably pick this up again next time and maybe go on a little bit further through it. So it's kind of give you some, if you haven't had an opportunity, well, I certainly hope you have, but at least go through your training materials and revisit these and listen to the tapes and so forth. And get up to speed on this, because these are very powerful products, and I think the main emphasis is look at your limitations, what's offered, where, what the limitations are as far as ages goes, as far as riders go, and time periods goes, and things like that, because it's going to help you when you get in the house as far as your credibility and also your knowledge of the product in and of itself. Like, for example, the tobacco. A lot of people may not realize that F&G considers tobacco usage as cigarettes only. Anything other than cigarettes, then it's considered non-tobacco. You indicate that they use tobacco on page 6 and what it is, but when you're doing the quotes and filling out page 2, you consider it as non-tobacco. Okay. You guys, do we have any questions?
Is it like liquidy?
Any other questions?
I need nail glue.
Well, we got some feedback, so somebody must still be unmuted. All right. We're going to go ahead and close out for today. You guys have a great week. Look forward to hearing back from you. If you got any questions, give us a call or email us. And go out there and make it happen, guys. Talk to you later.